Hello, and welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
This week, we have Brian Posey. Brian is a freelance technical writer who has received Microsoft's MVP award 16 times. Prior to going freelance, he served as a network engineer for the United States Department of Defense at Fort Knox and as CIO for a chain of hospitals and healthcare facilities. Brian is currently in his third year of training as a commercial scientist astronaut candidate. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
So software developer turned astronaut candidate. So what's that like?
I don't know that I would call myself software developer. I work more on the IT pro side. But yeah, the astronaut thing, that's something that I always wanted to do. And it never was a realistic possibility for various reasons. But the whole commercial space thing started taking off and I had the opportunity and I went for it.
So have you always been interested in astronaut stuff?
Yeah, for as long as I can remember.
What really got you? What really kind of dove you into that topic?
Early on, I wish I knew. I have absolutely no idea.
Okay. How about now?
It was kind of one of those things I just totally put aside, dismissed it as completely unrealistic. And then I started seeing things change with the development of commercial space and Virgin Galactic starting to develop a solution for flying tourists. And one thing led to another.
Okay. How did you get started with them, or what programs are you in, I guess, right now?
I'm in several right now. I'm responsible for the engineering and tech department for an organization called the Association of Space Flight Professionals. It used to be Astronauts for Hire, but then they did a rebranding. And the main organization that I'm involved with these days is called Project POSSUM. POSSUM being an acronym standing for Polar Suborbital Research in the Upper Mesosphere. And the idea is that we're going to be flying a suborbital space mission to study polar mesospheric clouds from space. At least that's how POSSUM started out. Right now, there's also work being done on an orbital mission, but that's something I can't really talk a lot about right now.
And how did you hear about that? I mean, that seems pretty cool.
Yeah, I had spent a lot of time looking around on the internet. I actually spent the better part of 3 years looking around trying to make the right contacts to get into commercial spaceflight. And one thing led to another, and I ended up doing some training on how to use a spacesuit up in New York with a company called Final Frontier Designs. And the guy who is the president of the company ended up just giving me all kinds of wonderful connections, and it was that really got everything going for me.
So you've been enjoying it yourself, I guess.
Yeah, most of it's fun. Some of it really, really isn't fun, but it's been an incredible journey.
What's been the most challenging thing so far?
Ooh, most challenging. It depends on if we're talking physical or academic. If we're talking about academic, calculus. If we're talking physical, motion sickness desensitization training.
Oh, wow. What was that like? What did you do there?
Oh, that was horrible. There's a place outside of Philly. It's Southampton, Pennsylvania, the National Aerospace Training and Research Center. And that's where I did the majority of my training early on. And they also do pilot training there for the military and for commercial aviation. And one of their full motion simulators, it's primarily designed to be a jet simulator. But for motion sickness desensitization training, what they do is they have somebody fly it remotely rather than having you fly it yourself. And they black out all of the gauges so you don't have anything to help you orientate yourself, no out-the-window displays. And they have somebody at a remote console just doing everything that they can. I'm sure it's choreographed ahead of time, but it feels like chaos when you're in there, just doing whatever they can to make you sick. And they do this over and over and over, and it lasts for 3 days for about 8 hours a day.
Wow. So it's kind of like you're like strapped into like a mechanical bowl or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like the world's nightmare mechanical bowl.
Yeah, with one key difference. With a mechanical bowl, you can at least see the room spinning. With this, you're totally blacked out. So your brain's telling you one thing, your stomach's telling you something totally different. When you do get sick in there, sometimes they'll stop for maybe a minute or two. Sometimes they just keep on going.
So do you have to bribe the pilot before they take you up?
I probably should have. No, the The guys that were responsible for looking after my well-being, I can't say enough good about them. They were fantastic to work with. It would have been a way worse experience than it actually was if it weren't for those guys.
So how long is the training before you would be certified to go up?
I don't really know. I'm sure aside from a refresher, I could probably go up tomorrow if the opportunity existed, because I stay current on everything. Nobody's really said exactly how long you have to do this for. I think the biggest thing that we're waiting on right now is just for the vehicle to be ready.
How long have you been already training for it then?
I'm in my fourth year right now.
What was one of the things you found most rewarding and enjoyed the most as far as like your...
There are several things, but probably the two that really stick out is aerobatic flight training. I went to a flight school out in California and got to learn how to do spins and rolls and hammerheads and all kinds of fun stuff like that. And then the other thing's got to be zero gravity.
So have you had a chance to go up in the Vomit Comet yet?
Many, many times. And the last time that I got to go in the Vomit Comet, I was wearing a fully pressurized spacesuit. I was one of the first three people in the world to ever wear a commercial spacesuit fully pressurized in weightlessness. And it was really cool because they gave me a partial mock-up of the science instruments that will be operating in space. So I got to see what it was like to wear a spacesuit and operate those instruments. And we even had a flight simulator I got to try out while I was weightless.
Did you get to provide feedback on how your experience with the spacesuit was then?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know of any modifications they may have made because of your feedback?
There was actually a brand new suit that was created just before my most recent trip on the Vomit Comet. When I said that other one was my most recent, I forgot that wasn't. There's been one after that, but I'm really not allowed to talk about that yet because a lot of that's under a non-disclosure agreement.
So without violating any NDAs, what kinds of things are you going to be doing in the space program?
For the Polar Mesospheric Cloud mission, I'm going to be operating something called the Noctilucent Cloud Tomography Experiment. Basically, my responsibilities are going to be getting cloud samples. Noctilucent clouds are way, way too high to study from an airplane, but they're too low to study from the space station or from an orbital vehicle. And they form for about 2 weeks a year over the North Pole. So what we're going to do is launch from a high latitude launch site. It looks like we're going to be using Ellison Air Force Base in Alaska. And the goal is to actually penetrate these clouds on the way up. So I'm going to be taking a sample on the way up and the way back down. I'm also going to be capturing high resolution photography of it up to the point of impact. And then once we get above it, and then there's also another experiment I'm going to be operating that's going to capture 3D images of the cloud structures. It's kind of like an MRI for clouds. That's the only way I know to explain it.
So you just reach your hand out the rocket as you're by and collect a little sample.
Yeah, just roll down the window.
I figure you just ask the cloud to pee in a cup.
Even better.
So you said you didn't really have any pivotal moment when you were a child that led you to this. I think I heard a podcast recently where they were talking about people that got into things because they were exposed at the right age to really become enamored with something. I think Elon Musk was exposed to space or a space program around the age of 10. Richard Branson was exposed to industry and entrepreneurism around the age of 10. So did anything special come to mind that happened to you or that you experienced around your 10-year-old self or something?
No, but I can tell you I was interested before the age of 2.
Wow. That's a long history of passion there.
Yeah.
So at the age of 2, is that your parents have been feeding you toy rockets at that age?
That's got to be it. I have no idea.
So we've talked a little bit about space and being an astronaut. Why don't you walk us through your tech journey? How did you get started with the technical side, the server admin and all that stuff?
I actually started out just writing code as a hobby. I used to spend practically every waking moment on an old Radio Shack color computer when I was a kid, just cranking out all kinds of code, trying to figure out how to make the machine do things it was never intended to do. And one thing led to another. I got a job as a network admin right out of high school, but it didn't last long. I got laid off almost immediately because of downsizing. And I happened to be having a conversation with somebody that I knew, and unbeknownst to me, he was responsible for computer operations for a large insurance company, and he ended up getting me a job, and I was there for several years working as a network admin, and that's kind of where it all began.
That's awesome. So one of those little moments where you were talking to the right person at the right time in the right place.
Yeah.
So you did start with playing with code, but then your first couple jobs were like sysadmin type things.
All of my jobs have been sysadmin. The only real coding I do these days is PowerShell.
Okay.
Would you say that any of the experiences you had in the kind of the tech field has kind of translated to some of the success that you're having and the stuff that you're doing in the astronaut pursuits?
Yeah, it's actually amazing how much of a crossover there really is. The tech field teaches you to focus on what sometimes seems like insignificant details, and that's a critical skill to have with spaceflight training.
Cool.
You know, I can think of about a million instances throughout my career where there's been one seemingly insignificant entry in an event log that has ended up playing or pointing the way to the entire problem I was trying to solve or something. And
it definitely seems to be the way it goes, is that little tiny detail is the one thing you got to pick up on.
Yeah, exactly.
In your bio, it has that you worked as a network engineer for the United States Department of Defense at Fort Knox, and then on to CIO for a chain of hospitals. So can you tell us about that journey through your career?
Yeah. The Department of Defense thing, that was another example of being at the right place at the right time. Just prior to that, I know you guys mentioned that you lived in Louisville for a period. I was working for a company called the Cobb Group, doing their Windows journals. I did Windows 95 Pro, Windows 3.1, and NT. And then I kind of got bored of writing. Imagine I'm still writing 20 plus years later, but saw an opening to go do network engineering for the military and jumped on it, ended up getting the job, and spent about a year and a half there working out at Fort Knox. And then things didn't go completely the way that I planned out there. Let's put it that way. A few conflicts with management. So I ended up applying for another job, got on with this company that runs hospitals and other types of healthcare facilities. Most of the hospitals were in rural areas, you know, the backwoods of Kentucky and places like that. So I spent a ton of time on the road going from facility to facility, and it's actually a lot of fun. I was only there for about a year, but.
So is there any gold still at Fort Knox, or has that all been moved out?
I wish I knew. I got to see the gold vault from a distance several times, but I've never been in there.
Well, that's where they keep the aliens now, though, right?
Oh, yeah?
You hear some interesting conspiracy theories if you spend some time off base in the Fort Knox area.
Yeah, the one I used to always hear was that all the drugs that the cops seize, they put it in the gold vault because that's the only place secure enough to keep the dealers from stealing it back. I have no idea if there's any truth to that or not, but that's what I've heard.
I understand you're also a prolific writer. Can you tell me how you got interested in writing and a little bit more about your writing career?
Yeah, sure. Like I said, I got my start with writing when I was at the Cobb Group doing various Windows journals and occasionally contributing to network journals and Flight Simulator, oddly enough. After I left there, I went to the military to work as a network engineer. And I had some people from the Cobb Group that called me and said, you know, hey, would you contribute articles on a freelance basis? Because we've got some content shortages. And that turned into a semi-full-time gig, you know, sending in content on a freelance basis. And then the Cobb Group went bust, but Tech Republic formed. And so I started sending a lot of articles to them. And one thing led to another, and I've been writing ever since.
Are the articles on just whatever you're working with or playing with at the time, or are they focused for a specific reason at the time when you create them?
I would say it's an even mix. About half of them are whatever I just happen to be working with or playing with at the time. The other half are whatever whoever asked me to write about. I don't always have the luxury of choosing the topics.
How do you like research when you don't have that luxury? Like, do you have a specific process that you go through to kind of like understand and learn? I imagine you're probably good at learning.
Oh, yeah, that does come natural, but the entire top floor of my house, I've got it just jam-packed with computers. I can set up pretty much anything I need to.
So it sounds like you've been everywhere and done everything. Is there anything or any specific role or position that really comes to mind as one of the most fun or challenging or just something that sticks out to you?
I think the role that's been the most fun, assuming that we're talking about the tech side, not the space side, has just been freelancing, because it gives me the flexibility to do what I want. I get to play with technologies and write about things that I would never have the opportunity to touch if I worked a corporate job.
About how long does it take to write an article, and how long are the articles?
Oh, it just depends on the subject matter, if it's something I have to do a lot of research on or not, how sleep deprived I am at the moment. Right before the call, I cranked a 1,000-word article out in about half an hour. Sometimes something like that might take me a day or two. It really just depends.
And you've got a couple of the little books.
The Conversational Geek.
Yes.
So what are these?
There's another Microsoft MVP, J. Peter Brazzisi. He started a company called Conversational Geek. And what they do is they create really, really short books, usually somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 words. Sometimes they're significantly longer. And they're designed to teach somebody the basics of a particular technology or subject matter as efficiently as possible so that they can at least be able to talk about it in a semi-intelligent way. Looking at what I've written for them, my most recent one was Conversational Cloud Monitoring. I've also done Conversational Network Monitoring, Astronaut Training, Rocket Science, File Transfers and Data Security, and the list kind of goes on from there.
And how might one get access to this?
You can go to the Conversational Geek website and download them for free. All you have to do is put in your name, and I think they ask for an email address, and that's it.
Oh, awesome. Wow, that's awesome.
And then they also set up a booth at Ignite every year, and they've got printed books on hand for the taking. Oh, yeah, you were asking about challenges for spaceflight training. That was another one. I was close to 300 pounds at one point. Getting myself fit, that was a big one.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, what did you do for that? Like, well, you said you're a vegetarian. Did you change your diet to vegetarian?
Yes. Yeah, I had been trying for years to lose it, and nothing I was doing worked. And I tried that out of desperation, and lo and behold, that's what it took.
Well, so I don't know what kind of eater you were beforehand. I'm kind of a picky eater. My diet consists mostly of pizza, macaroni, and burgers.
Love it.
and no vegetables. So how difficult was it to go vegetarian?
You know, honestly, you would think it would be really tough, but about a day or two in, I realized I don't even like meat that much. So it wasn't difficult at all.
I've been recently trying keto, which is pretty much the opposite of your diet. but I had the same kind of experience with burger buns, like burger buns at a restaurant. I just don't want them anymore. The bread is really nasty now. What about exercise? I mean, I imagine even for an astronaut training, you have to do quite a bit of exercise, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I try to do 1 to 2 hours every night. I've got an elliptical downstairs and an inclined sit-up bench and dumbbells. It doesn't always work out because sometimes I'm writing till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. If at all possible, I'd try to call it quits by 11 so that I can get some exercise.
That's a pretty pretty strict regimen. It's all 7 days a week?
Yeah. Yeah, unless I'm too sore or just schedule's too busy, but yeah, I try to.
That's pretty impressive. I have trouble keeping up my workout schedule. It seems like I'll do good and then I miss a day and then it all just falls apart. Same thing for my diet.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I don't have a choice. I've got to stay on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to go up whenever they give you the opportunity to go up, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And, you know, funny thing about spacesuits, you know, I can't really talk technical details, but, you know, a regular pair of pants, you've got a cloth waistline. It'll kind of give a little bit. Spacesuit has a metal ring around the waist, and that thing does not budge. You gain weight, you're not getting into it.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. How big is a spacesuit? Like, how much waist room do you have?
Not as much as you would think. I don't know what the dimensions are, but the way that you have to climb into it, it's a little bit awkward. And the waistline, it can trip you up just getting it around your knees and your legs because of the position you have to be in to get it on.
I guess you can't go one leg at a time, can you?
No, you can't. I'm trying to be really careful here, not give away too much.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, normally most people don't jump both feet into their pants, I don't think.
Wait.
But with a spacesuit with that metal ring, I mean, you know, they kind of both got to go up at the same time. You don't.
Yeah. And like I said, I can't say too much, but let's just say you don't put it on where you think you would. You don't enter the pants at the waist.
Oh, fantastic. So you start with both arms going into the legs.
That's the only conclusion I could come to.
Now I want to see a YouTube video of somebody getting in a spacesuit.
Yeah, that's actually how my son gets dressed. He puts...
Well, think like a onesie for a baby and you're not too far off.
So would you recommend the astronaut journey to others that might be interested?
Yeah. I mean, you never know where it'll lead. If you don't take a chance, you'll never find out.
How do you get started in that? Like, who would you contact to be like, hey, I want to go into space?
Best bet right now, I would say contact Project Possum. There's an application process. They're pretty selective about who they take, but you never know.
So you're saying I don't have a chance?
Never said that. Look, you know, one thing I will say is that on paper, I totally do not fit the mold of an astronaut candidate or an IT pro. I've kind of broken all the rules all the way through my career, and yet here I am. So you just never know.
That's the way to excel, right? It's just don't follow the rules.
What's the biggest rule you've broken?
Ooh, ask me again when we're not recording.
What's the biggest rule that they know that you've broken?
That I don't have an aerospace background, at least not prior to this.
Yeah, because back in the early days of the space program, the astronaut program, all of the astronauts were pilots, right?
Yeah, well, I do have flight experience, but in school, I majored in computer science and business, whereas everybody else in my astronaut candidate class, they all came from the aerospace industry. A lot of them worked for NASA and different aviation and aerospace companies.
So it's one of those things where you walk into the room and you're like, I don't know why I'm here, because...
Yeah, that's exactly
it. They're all rocket scientists, and I'm a, you know, systems administrator.
Exactly.
Computer nerds are taking over the world.
We are.
We're going mainstream.
Totally.
I've kind of gone the opposite direction because I started with aerospace, and now I'm a computer nerd. So,
would you start out with aerospace?
I was doing aerospace engineering at the University of Cincinnati.
Oh, cool. So.
And then I kind of realized that I wanted to get more into like AI and maybe kind of like the UAV. I just thought that was kind of the most interesting part of, and also at the same time had done a lot with software and kind of messing around with the internet and web development, that sort of thing. And that just kind of, every time I tried to get a co-op job that was in that field, everyone was like, nah, we want computer science, we want computer engineering. And they didn't like my aerospace background. So
you're overqualified.
so then I was like, well, then I guess I'll just go aerospace. So, or computer science. So that's when I kind of shifted.
And he had the opportunity to come work with us. And
yeah,
couldn't pass that up.
Yeah, well, at some point, you know, other things in life came along, like children, and you get other priorities, and you realize, you know what, you know, like sometimes you just need to have something that also pays the bills and provides for your family.
So what he's trying to tell you is that he's slumming.
Well, I wouldn't exactly put it that way, but...
So it's your safety career.
No, it's just there's a lot more opportunity here than there is elsewhere, right? So on that note, do you have any words of advice for folks that might be kind of looking to get started or kind of are in a situation where they're just starting their careers out? What would you say to them?
The biggest thing I would say to them is don't be afraid to do things that other people would consider to be audacious or to set goals that seem somewhat unrealistic. Because what I found is that most people are afraid to even try, whether we're talking about aerospace or something IT related. And that weeds out a lot of your would-be competitors right there, because so many people never even take that first step. So you'll find that things are easier to get done than you think.
Yes, that's pretty good advice. So do you have any upcoming speaking engagements that you would want to tell any of our listeners about?
I don't have any scheduled right now.
How can people get a hold of you to maybe ask you some more questions about either IT or space?
The easiest way to get a hold of me is through email. It's Brian, spelled with an E, Brien. It's Brian at brianposey.com.
Thank you for listening to the Six Figure Developer Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook.
We would love to hear from you. Leave us a review on iTunes.
That was Brian Posey. Brian is a freelance technical writer who has received Microsoft's MVP award 16 times for his work with Windows Server, IIS, Exchange Server, File System Storage, Cloud and Data Center Management, and Windows and Devices for IT. As a side project, Brian is currently in his fourth year of training as a commercial scientist astronaut candidate. Thanks so much, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
This has been the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I am John Ash.